Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Making Sense with Steve Laser.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, fellow liberals and Democrats, inquisitive Republicans, and concerned citizens of all backgrounds. Welcome to Making Sense with Steve Laser, the show that breaks down the top issues in the last week in politics, strips out the nonsense, and provides you the best analysis in political media. Welcome aboard, and let's get to work. We have a terrific show this week. Topics include Egypt's President Morsi out on his tushy. Egypt's army removes the democratically elected leader to reclaim democracy from the Islamists. Then the NSA soap opera continues with Snowden and the Evo Morales aircraft saga. Then updates and follow-ups on several issues that I've covered previously, including Rush Limbaugh's advertiser struggles and the fallout from a couple of Supreme Court rulings, including the one striking down the Voting Rights Act and Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act. If you want to write to me and give me your opinion of any topic I cover, write to makingsenseletters@yahoo.com, and I may just read your opinion on the air. Again, that's makingsenseletters@yahoo.com. So we'll get started with our first segment right after this.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Welcome back. Let's talk about the dramatic events that occurred in Egypt this past week. This past Monday, after days of some of the largest protest demonstrations that the world had ever seen, Egypt's military handed then-President Morsi a 48-hour deadline to order reforms and resolve the issues that had led to the protests. Some of those reforms would have included sharing power with the opposition. Morsi was first defiant in response to the deadline. Then, as it approached, just a few hours beforehand, he offered to amend the new constitution, which was put into effect just this past January, as well as form an interim coalition government to oversee parliamentary elections. The army generals were not satisfied with Morsi's offer, and so the army arrested him and removed him from office and moved against his base of support, the Muslim Brotherhood, arresting several dozen of its leaders and other members. Adli Mansour, who had been the head of Egypt's Supreme Constitutional Court, was sworn in on Thursday as Egypt's interim president. Now, if you're a fan of democracy and against the idea of the military overturning a democratically elected government, and sadly, Morsi was Egypt's first ever democratically elected leader, at the very least, you're probably surprised and concerned about this turn of events in Egypt. Well, I'm definitely not surprised, and my concern is simply that the Egyptians, well, that they get the democratic government that they want. Morsi was definitely not it. Now, when I say that, understand that this is not my first go-around covering Egypt and Morsi. During my show back on November 25th, I covered the attempt by Morsi to issue a number of decrees that would have given him dictatorial powers. I said at the time that the powers Morsi was assuming for himself would have given him the power to pass laws by decree, arrest anyone without cause, and in short, pass any law for any reason and do anything at any time to anyone for any reason. It was such an overreaching power grab that I noted that the entire world's media had a similar take as mine. Everyone agreed in the media. Morsi united us. That's something that you almost never see. News organizations from vastly different ideologies, like Democracy Now!, Fox News, Voice of America in the United States, Israel's Haaretz and Jerusalem Post, Egypt's Ahram.org, pan-Middle Eastern news media like Al Monitor and Al Jazeera, and European media like Allgemeiner, UK Guardian, and Russia's RT and RIA Novosti all were covering what Morsi was doing, generally describing it as a dictatorial power grab. Morsi's attempted power grab also accomplished uniting what had up until that time been a fractured Egyptian opposition that was prone to bickering amongst themselves. I mentioned at least once or twice in November and December of 2012 that I didn't think Morsi's presidency would survive what he had tried to do. And my predictions now have come to pass. So, is this removal of Morsi by the Egyptian military as simple as to be described as a military coup that removed a democratically elected government? I don't think so. The Egyptian people worked hard and risked a lot to bring down Hosni Mubarak and to get a democratic government that served them. A meet the new boss, same as the old boss replacement for Mubarak, was unacceptable. And it was, quite frankly, stupid to try it on Morsi's part. A populace that is so fed up and energized that they will take to the streets by the millions, risking their lives against Mubarak, a dictator with close to absolute power in his country. Well, that kind of a populace was not about to sit there while Morsi grabbed power. Of course, what Morsi attempted is something that many of us could have predicted, considering the party and group to which Morsi belonged. Morsi was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood and an Islamist, meaning that he believed Islam had a role to play in the government. Those of us who believe that there should be a wall of separation between church and state, and I count myself among that group, well, we believe that the political parties and leaders who think they represent God will eventually attempt to overstep their authority, restrict freedoms, and act repressively if challenged. Now, we believe that, regardless of whether those parties and leaders are Muslim, Jewish, Christian, or whatever other religion. The evidence of that is right here in the United States. We have those on the Christian right and politicians pandering to them, trying to restrict equality for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered communities. They're trying to restrict freedom of choice for women with regards to abortions. They get after even people for doing yoga because yoga is too closely associated with Eastern religion, so it gets called demonic. We can go on. These folks, whether it is Christian, Jewish, or Islamic fundamentalists, think that that's okay to do because they interpret that their religion means that God is on their side in those efforts. How do you argue with that? How is someone whose goal is a democratic society with reason as our guide supposed to deal with people like that? Why do you think the law should be like that? You could ask one of them. And then they'll say, well, God says so. Well, okay. What are you supposed to say to that? That's pretty much the end of reason and the beginning of insanity. Now, understand that I'm not an atheist, and I have no problem with people who have strong beliefs, people who are very observant with their religion and all of that. But leave that at the door when you vote and when you legislate. Those beliefs have no business impacting the rights and the equality of other people. In fact, it's a darn near a requirement, in my opinion, for a fully functioning democracy to have pretty strong separation between church and state for all the reasons I stated. Which brings me to another topic, the role of the United States in Egypt and the other Arab Spring countries. You see, since the Arab Spring started, Republicans and conservatives in the United States have been criticizing the Obama administration for not being more involved in the course that these revolutions have taken. They've particularly criticized the role that Islamists have been playing in the newly formed governments of some of these Arab Spring countries. As I noted, having religious fundamentalists in a government is not a welcome sight for me either. But I disagree with my friends on the right-wing side of the aisle here in the U.S. as to the remedy. If you're going to promote democracy, you have to trust the democratic process. If we in the U.S. force our will on the people of Egypt or Tunisia or whoever else, that's the antithesis of democracy. What would have been the result if we in the U.S. had taken things into our hands in Egypt and forced Morsi out via an intervention or something similar? Would the Egyptian people view that as a legitimate expression of their will? I don't think so. The Muslim Brotherhood would have been seen as martyrs fighting against the big bad American devil. We would have strengthened them in the long run, and there's enough of a risk of that happening because of the way things transpired, as is. But at least it's all internal to Egypt, and there is a strong argument that the army was doing the will of its people. What I'm not sure many people inside and outside of the U.S. understand is that the Republicans believe that diplomacy should be engaged from the U.S. Department of Defense. They actually say things like that behind closed doors and in right-wing discussion forums on the Internet. Republicans think all our diplomatic efforts should have at least a veiled threat of force behind them. They think that we should control other countries and make them do what we want. Obama did not do that here, and I think that was the right course of action. We should not be in the business of trying to control other countries. Let the people of Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, and other countries work out what they want for themselves. No one gave us the authority to try to control other people. Now, I've used that word a lot, and I realize that. Control. But that's what it is, isn't it? The Republican version of U.S. foreign policy is like the geopolitical version of a control freak. And like an individual who is a control freak, trying to be a geopolitical control freak is always going to backfire. People do not like people who try to control them. Countries do not like other countries who try to control them. What Republicans do not seem to understand is that a huge percentage of ill will that exists in the world towards the United States comes from the perception that we are trying to control other countries. It's counterproductive, and we can see in the case of Egypt that it's not necessary. We'll be right back. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R. What a great song. Well, the Snowden NSA affair continues with a side order of Evo Morales. As most of you know, Edward Snowden, a former contractor, Allen, who works with the NSA, decided to release what he purports to be classified details regarding NSA surveillance programs. Prior to the release of that information, he fled to Hong Kong. After languishing in Hong Kong for a number of days, he fled to Moscow. Now, with him, Snowden took 4 laptops full of sensitive classified information. And without a doubt, that information is now in the hands of both Chinese and Russian intelligence services. Put it another way, do you think that Snowden would be in a position to refuse the officials of either country when they asked to see what was on those computers? Do any of you think that Chinese or Russian intelligence would have missed the opportunity to get that data? I don't think so. One of the things that struck me in the last few weeks was that Snowden has an offer on the table for asylum from Putin in Russia. He won't take it. Do you know why he won't take it? Because Putin has said that the condition of asylum in Russia is that you have to stop releasing this classified information. Putin also indicated that he could not turn Snowden over to the U.S. in good conscience because we here in the U.S. have the death penalty. Now, I just have to point out here that the irony of someone like Snowden being holed up in Russia and attempting to get asylum there, and Putin not turning him over for supposed fear of the U.S. imposing the death penalty on him, it's ironic because if the situation were reversed, Putin would make sure that Snowden died for what he did and died in a drawn-out and painful way. Now, I know that because of what happened with Alexander Litvinenko. As Wikipedia notes, Alexander Litvinenko was a former officer of the Russian Federal Security Service, FSB and KGB, who fled from court prosecution in Russia and received political asylum in the United Kingdom. According to his wife and father, he was working for MI6 and MI5, two different directorates of UK intelligence, after receiving the asylum. Upon his arrival to London, he continued to support the Russian oligarch in exile, Boris Berezovsky. And he supported Mr. Berezovsky in his media campaign against the Russian government. In November of 2006, Mr. Litvinenko suddenly fell ill and was hospitalized. He died 3 weeks later, become the world's first confirmed victim of lethal polonium-210-induced acute radiation syndrome. And subsequent investigations by British authorities into the circumstances of Litvinenko's death led to serious diplomatic difficulties between the British and Russian governments. You see, the main suspect in the case is a former officer of the Russian Federal Protective Services, the FSO, a man by the name of Andrei Lugovoy, who remains in Russia. The British government has tried to extradite him without success. Andrei Nekrasov, a filmmaker and friend of Litvinenko, has suggested that the poison was, quote, sadistically designed to trigger a slow, tortuous, and spectacular demise. Expert on Russia Paul Joyal said, a message has been communicated to anyone who wants to speak out against the Kremlin. If you do, no matter who you are, where you are, we will find you and we will silence you in the most horrible way possible. Folks, that is how Putin deals with people who he considers traitors, who give up state secrets publicly. That's what Snowden would be facing if he had done the same thing to the country in whose airport he is currently hiding. The irony here is pretty substantial. It doesn't say a whole lot for Snowden's stated purpose to shine a light on a state security service that goes too far in what it does by hiding out in the country whose state service did this to Litvinenko and almost certainly spies on its citizens and the rest of the world. I should also point out that while Snowden expresses solidarity with Bradley Manning, another leaker of information, Manning is a member of the LGBT community, and Russia has recently issued anti-gay decrees that would mean that Manning would have no political rights and certainly not equality as a member of the LGBT community if he was in Russia. The restrictions on gay equality politics is so severe in Russia that now it's literally against the law to fly or show the rainbow flag. So is Snowden really showing solidarity with Manning by holding up in Russia? Last week, we also had the incident with Evo Morales' plane. Evo Morales is the leader of Bolivia, the president of Bolivia. So we had an incident with his plane, which had to make an unscheduled stop in Austria for reasons that are still not completely clear. Now, one thing is clear, and that is the cockpit conversation between Morales' pilot and air traffic control in Vienna gives one potential reason for the stop.
Control, good evening. Foxtrot Bravo 001. Foxtrot Bravo 001, good evening. Information Whiskey, expect ILS runway 16.
Information Whiskey, ILS runway 16, Foxtrot Alpha Bravo 001.
And do you need any assistance? Alpha Bravo 001, do you need any assistance upon landing?
Not at this moment. We need to land because we cannot get a correct indication of the fuel indication. So as a precaution, we need to land.
Alpha Bravo 001, Russia, continue on present heading as a vector foot approach, descent flight level 90.
Morales claims that the U.S. ordered four sovereign countries, France, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, to deny transit of their airspace to his plane, and that his plane ran out of fuel and had to land in Austria. Is it possible that this is the truth? Sure. But the conversation his pilot had with air traffic control in Vienna doesn't seem to support that. I'm sure we'll find out more in the coming days. On Friday, it was announced that Venezuela and Nicaragua have accepted the asylum requests of Snowden. Now, it's obvious why Venezuela's President Maduro would offer asylum. Like his hero and predecessor, Hugo Chavez, Maduro will do just about anything he can think of to annoy the United States and distract his people from his many failures, including an inflation rate of about 27% and an economy in recession. Not to mention out-of-control crime. Caracas, the capital city of Venezuela, is the murder capital of the world. It has twice the murder rate as number two Cape Town, South Africa. And as a country, Venezuela has a higher murder and violent crime rate than any country in Africa other than Ivory Coast. And then we have further ironies. What Snowden did was supposedly to highlight authoritarianism and abuse of civil liberties and human rights with regard to privacy, right? According to Human Rights Watch, since Chavez's ascension to power and continuing under current President Maduro, Venezuela has racked up a dismal record on human rights and other abuses. Human Rights Watch talks about Chavez's authoritarian legacy and says his tenure was characterized by a dramatic concentration of power and open disregard for basic human rights guarantees. Over the years, the Chavez government has built a legal regime that allows it to censor and punish its critics in clear violation of international norms, said Jose Miguel Vivanco, America's director at Human Rights Watch. He continued, "Now it is using these laws to limit public discussion on issues of national importance." On January 9, 2013, the government-controlled telecommunications agency, Conatel, ordered the television station Globovision to halt transmission of a series of four spots that utilize excerpts from official speeches and the text of the Venezuelan Constitution to criticize the government's position on whether an inauguration could take place on January 10, the date stipulated in the Constitution, without the president's presence in Venezuela. The order is not limited to the four spots, but also bars the station from broadcasting, quote, any similar video. Now, if Snowden accepts asylum in Venezuela, he will be in a country that censors and intimidates its critics, including those in the media. And from there, he will be speaking out against what he perceives are authoritarian problems with the U.S. government. Oh, and that solidarity he wants to show with Bradley Manning? Well, Venezuela has a law that defines marriage as being between one man and one woman, something that we recently struck down here in the United States. Looking at Nicaragua, Snowden's other current choice, is one whose leadership, personified by Daniel and Ortega, chose as one of its first issues back in 2007 to issue a blanket ban on abortion, even in the cases of rape, incest, or life-threatening pregnancy. Women's rights advocates who are working to try to reverse this law have been subject to official investigation into their work as well as threats and harassment. So if Snowden chooses Nicaragua, he will be choosing a country that looks upon women as little more than baby incubators whose law requires women to die rather than abort a life-threatening pregnancy. Oh, and in terms of LGBT rights and solidarity with Bradley Manning, Nicaragua has no recognition of same-sex marriage and allows discrimination against LGBT for purposes of adoption. The Ortega government that is so gung-ho about taking on the big bad United States is too afraid of the Catholic Church to grant women the right to have control over their bodies, and they're too afraid of the Catholic Church to grant marriage, adoption, and other rights to the LGBT community. Taking into account the human rights situations in Nicaragua and Venezuela. Tell me again why Snowden started all of this in the first place. He felt the U.S. wasn't adequately respecting the civil liberties of its citizens, right? And so he is moving to either Nicaragua or Venezuela after spending time in China and Russia. Actually, this situation is worth two of those. Let me play it again. Also, as if those ironies aren't enough, Snowden is a self-proclaimed libertarian and follower of Ron and Rand Paul. He supposedly wants small government and hates socialism. And both Venezuela and Nicaragua's leaders are socialist. And while Snowden is trying to enjoy his life in either one of those two authoritarian countries and ignoring the irony and hypocrisy of it, he will just have to wonder in the back of his mind and hope that the United States doesn't decide to play just as much hardball with its traitors as the country whose airport he just holed up in did with theirs. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and is the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentreprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes, florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentreprises.com. Scentreprises, our business makes you sensational.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality.
And now some updates and follow-ups on several issues from previous shows. A few weeks ago, I talked about how efforts to target advertisers on the Rush Limbaugh show and explain to them the kinds of things that he says on the air has created a flood of requests by advertisers not to have their ads run on Rush's show. It got so bad that the syndicators and other radio networks associated with Rush were complaining about losing money. Well, they got to pay Rush Limbaugh about $50 million a year, so that requires a lot of incoming advertising dollars to meet that salary. Well, I have two updates on that front. First, in June, SodaStream USA, the U.S.-based arm of an Israeli company that makes machines that allow you to make soda at home, has pulled its ads from Rush Limbaugh's show. But on the other side of things, as reported by Politico, Premier Radio, Limbaugh's syndicator, has been pulling out all the stops to try to gain more advertisers for his show. Premier Radio Senior Vice President and Director of Talk Radio Sales, Dan Metter, said Premier, quote, rose to the challenge by focusing on entrepreneurial companies that don't work with major ad agencies. They're not buying an ideology, they're buying an audience, Metter told The Gathering. Many of the advertisers are buying ads with our progressive radio hosts and our conservative radio hosts and everything in between. The companies are not buying Limbaugh's conservative ideology or fellow talk show host Randy Rhodes' liberal ideology, Metter said. So obviously, they've got some good salespeople over at Premier because, you know, despite the size of Rush's audience, the resistance to having one's brand associated with someone who calls women the kind of names that Limbaugh has called them, well, the resistance to being associated with that has to be immense. But the battle continues with Premier's obviously talented sales staff on one side and organizations like StopRush.net on the other. Things were trending toward the groups trying to enforce a boycott as recently as a month ago. Now it looks a little more like a stalemate. I'll continue to keep you all up to date on what happens with Rush and his advertisers. Last week, I talked about the Supreme Court's decisions in the two gay marriage cases before the court. I mentioned that I thought one of the next logical steps in the fight for equality for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered community was to try to pass ENDA, or what's known as the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. This is a bill that would prevent discrimination in employment practices like hiring, firing, and promotions for the LGBT community or anybody who might be assumed to be part of that LGBT community. You don't actually have to be gay to be able to be fired for someone suspecting that you're gay. Well, passing ENDA is exactly what the Democratic Senate is trying to do. Justin Snow writes for The Edge Boston that the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee is expected to begin the markup process of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act on the morning of July 10th. The committee markup process will be chaired by longtime ENDA supporter Senator Tom Harkin, who's a Democrat from Iowa, and it's expected to include a committee vote on the legislation to send the bill to the Senate floor. The bill is co-sponsored by all 12 Democrats on the committee, as well as one Republican, Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois. Now, while I hope that ENDA passes, I think that the Republicans in the Senate will filibuster it, and I don't know if the Democrats can pull the needed votes from the Republican side to defeat the filibuster and invoke cloture. If it does pass the Senate, I really doubt that the Republican-controlled House of Representatives will even bring it up for a vote. But the attempt and the process of going through this is very important. How far the ENDA bill gets is going to tell us a lot about how far we need to go and how much work we're going to need to do before we can get it passed. Also, young voters are much more prone to see gay rights as human rights, and they are likely going to think very ill of Republicans who fight passage of a gay rights bill. So each attempt to further the equality for the LGBT community is going to hurt the future prospects for opposing Republicans to get reelected and to continue to oppose equality. Who knows, right? I mean, ENDA might pass. What's that Wayne Gretzky saying? You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. You got to take your shot. We might get ENDA passed. You never know. I'll continue to keep you updated in the future on the efforts to pass ENDA. Now, I remarked last week when talking about the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Act that we could expect to see numerous voter suppression laws passed in those jurisdictions that had previously been subject to requiring pre-clearance from the Justice Department to enact any changes to their voting laws. When I made that prediction, I had no idea how fast those states would move, or that in some states, laws were already in the pipeline that would become law now that preclearance wasn't needed. As Michael Cooper reported in the New York Times, within hours after the Voting Rights Act being struck down, Texas officials said that they would begin enforcing a strict voter identification requirement for voters, which had been blocked by a federal court on the grounds that it would disproportionately affect black and Hispanic voters. In Mississippi and Alabama, which had passed their own voter identification laws but had not received federal approval for them, state officials said that they were moving to begin enforcing those laws. The next flashpoint over voting laws will most likely be in North Carolina, where several voting bills had languished there this year as Republicans who control the legislature awaited the Supreme Court ruling on the Voting Rights Act, which had covered many counties in the state. After the ruling, some Republican lawmakers said that they would move as soon as next week to pass a bill requiring voters to present photo identification at the polls. And some Republicans there were considering cutting back on the number of early voting days in the state, which were especially popular among Democrats and black voters during the 2012 presidential elections. These guys aren't even trying to hide at all what they're trying to do. It's pretty obvious. The other thing is, It's amazing how fast Republicans can move the government when they're in acts that attack the rights of black people and Latinos. It's like a cheap car, or something that looks like a cheap car with a three-cylinder engine, suddenly starts performing like a Ferrari. You just look at it and exclaim, where did that come from? Where did this come from, Republicans, this ability to all of a sudden move quickly and pass these laws? It's that important to Republicans to discriminate against the rights of black people and Latinos. That really gets their juices flowing. They're motivated. They want to get out there and pass these laws that try to prevent black people and Latinos from voting. Just amazing. We'll be right back. What's the biggest fallacy about diamonds? More facets are better and will create more fire. Doesn't that make sense? Nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, larger facets create more fire. The new Blaze Cut is a unique square diamond with a fabulous display of colors never before seen emanating from a diamond. In fact, the Blaze Diamond has 9 times the fire of any other round diamond of the same size. It took a genius to invent the Blaze Diamond, and an amazing artist to highlight the beauty in fine jewelry. View Blaze Diamond Jewelry by Bez Ambar on Badler.com, BADLER.com, or search Blaze Diamond on YouTube to see remarkable videos. Experience this new innovation by coming to Maurice Badler Fine Jewelry in New York City, 485 Park Avenue between 58th and 59th Streets. Visit Badler.com for more information or call 800-M-BADLER. That's 800-M-B-A-D-L-E-R.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. All that glitters is gold.
The unemployment numbers for June came out this past Friday. The Associated Press reports that the economy added 195,000 private sector jobs in June. The report also revised upward the number of private sector jobs created in April and May. The jobs report suggests a stronger economy and makes it more likely that the Fed will slow its bond purchases as early as September. Despite the job creation, the unemployment rate remained at 7.6% because more people who had previously given up on finding a job came back into the marketplace and started looking for jobs. That is a general indication that folks out there perceive that there are more jobs opening up. Employers now have added an average of 202,000 jobs each month for the past 6 months. That's also a pretty good indication that the economy is picking up steam. The right-wing media sphere, of course, reacted in full panic mode to the good news. Terrence Jeffrey from CNS News wrote, "Since January 2009, when Barack Obama was inaugurated as president, the United States has seen 54 straight months with the unemployment rate at 7.5% or higher, which is the longest stretch of unemployment at or above that rate since 1948, when the Bureau of Labor Statistics started calculating the national unemployment rate." Of course, what Mr. Jeffrey seems to intentionally leave out of his analysis is that when George W. Bush handed over the reins of government to President Obama, the economy was in free fall, hemorrhaging 800,000 jobs a month, and many people wondered if there was anyone who could possibly turn the economy around. Once it became clear that President Obama was going to be able to turn the economy around, Republicans who had caused the problems in the first place suddenly became experts on the economy again and started criticizing. This is yet another example of that saying, past is prologue. The political right in this country are still claiming that Franklin Delano Roosevelt caused the Great Depression, even though it was well underway when he took office. In fact, President Roosevelt took office March 4, 1933. The stock market had crashed in October of 1929, nearly 4 years before. In 1929, the unemployment rate was 3%. By the time Roosevelt took office in 1933, the unemployment rate was over 20%. Almost half of American banks had already failed, and industrial production had dropped by 50% from their 1929 highs. So, when I tell you that Republicans have a history of blaming the economic woes that a Republican president caused on the Democratic president who takes office afterwards, well, let's just say I think you can see that I'm right here. The Great Depression was not Franklin Delano Roosevelt's fault, and the current economic conditions, well, we're still seeing the after effects of Bush and the Republicans crashing the economy in 2007 and 2008, and President Obama is doing a great job picking up the pieces. We'll be right back.
Do you know our sense of smell is the most important after our sense of sight? It's the most powerful as well, and it triggers memories and emotions, and it's the most compelling aspect to make you feel wonderful. At scentaprises.com, that's scenterprises.com, we take you on a fragrance journey to learn about the magic and mystery of scent to create your very own custom perfume. We have an exquisite range of perfume blends which spans the entire fragrance palette, from sparkling citrus notes to light, fresh, and clean herbals and marine notes. Florals that everyone will love, such as fresh, gentle, sexy, and heady florientals. And if you prefer sophisticated fragrances, our blends of spicy, amber, woodsy, musky, mossy, and luscious gourmand vanilla notes are warm, sensual, and combine beautifully with all the blends. So why wear what everyone else wears when you can create your very own custom perfume? Be different. Contact Sue at scentaprises.com. Scentaprises, our business makes you sensational.
And now it's time for our weekly Hall of Fame and shame for those politicians and prominent individuals who made great sense or shameful nonsense, respectively. First, our Hall of Fame for making sense. Winning the Hall of Fame this week for making great sense is comedian and fellow radio host Henry Rollins. In an epic rant in LA Weekly, comedian and radio host Henry Rollins went right at the Republican Party and criticized them for their regressive position on the issues. Rollins wrote, "Bad news for the haters department. You realize that all those obnoxious 16-year-olds you see everywhere texting their friends, who are standing next to them, will be able to vote in the 2016 elections. Do you think that you'll be able to sell them on your anti-gay, anti-women, anti-brown, anti-black platform? Do you think they want to end up like you? I bet they don't. Governor Bobby Jindal said that you all have to stop being the stupid party. I don't think you can do it. How did equality become political? Because you can't handle science, change, or the truth. America is on the move. You are not." Wow, I gotta say, that's gonna leave a mark. So congratulations to Henry Rollins for winning this week's Hall of Fame for making great sense. Now our Hall of Shame this week for those politicians and prominent individuals who made shameful nonsense. In third place this week in our Hall of Shame, we have former Alaska governor and one-time GOP vice presidential nominee, Sarah Palin. Ms. Palin is one of those conservatives who is desperately trying to convince Latinos that conservatives really do despise Latinos as much as we think they do. Obviously, that's not what she thinks she's trying to do, but in effect, that's what she's doing. She's desperately trying to convince us just how much she and other conservatives despise us. Let's set the background. Ms. Palin self-identifies as a Christian who believes the Bible is the complete truth and word of God. Fine, nothing wrong with that. It's important to mention that, though, because her nonsensical statement is an ecclesiastical metaphor. In the Gospels, there's the story of Judas Iscariot, who is a traitor to Christ, who in Christianity is the Son of God and the Savior of the world. So in Christianity, It's not possible to be a traitor bigger or worse than that. That's big-time traitor stuff there. I mean, you're betraying the Son of God and Savior of the world. Doesn't get worse than that, right? So Sarah Palin weighed in on the immigration debate by attacking Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio. Senator Marco Rubio is one of the Senate's so-called Gang of Eight that has been trying to put together a compromise on an immigration reform plan. In fact, the bill that the Senate came up with and passed the Senate last week, and President Obama called Senator Rubio to congratulate him on the immigration reform bill passing the Senate. Sarah Palin then tweeted on June 28th, quote, "Obama calls Rubio to congratulate him on immigration reform. Hope it was worth 30 pieces of silver." Now, for reference, Judas Iscariot was paid 30 pieces of silver by the Romans to betray Christ. So Sarah Palin is comparing Marco Rubio's trying to address a concern of the Latino community regarding undocumented immigrants to the greatest treason possible in her spiritual view of the universe. I said it during my most recent appearance on the Cavuto Show. Republicans, as the immigration reform efforts progress, we are watching you. We Latinos are not going to forget whatever you do here. In any case, Sarah Palin's crazy tweet that combines a nasty reminder of conservative disdain for Latino issues with a grossly hyperbolic Christian metaphor wins her third place this week in our Hall of Shame for worst nonsense of the week. In second place, for even worse nonsense this week, we have former Florida Republican Congressman Alan West. Alan West is mad at Lady Gaga. He's mad at Lady Gaga for her playful altering of a few words at the end of her rendition of the national anthem last week during a gay pride rally. Holding a rainbow flag, Lady Gaga sang at the end, "O say does that star-spangled flag of pride yet wave o'er the land of the free and a home for the gays." In response, West wrote on Facebook, quote, "Having served in the U.S. Army for 22 years along some very brave men and women, I find Lady Gaga's defiling," he used the word defiling, "of our national anthem reprehensible. This young lady should be taken to Fort McHenry and given a history lesson as to why Francis Scott Key wrote those words, those incredible words." Yeah, because if they bring Lady Gaga to Fort McHenry, she'll see the British bombarding the fort. What is that? "Mr. West, I've also served in the military, sir. In my case, I served in the U.S. Air Force, and I'm embarrassed at the things that you did while you were on active duty. You see, Mr. West, who was then Lieutenant Colonel Alan West serving in Iraq, went way too far when he received unverified intelligence that an Iraqi police officer, Yahya Hamoudi, might be involved in a plot to ambush his unit. Now, on this unverified intelligence, he had his men detain Mr. Hamoudi, and during that process, Colonel West's men beat Mr. Hamoudi significantly on the head and body. Later, West fired a pistol right near Mr. Hamoudi's head during his interrogation of Mr. Hamoudi. It later came out during an army investigation that Mr. Hamoudi was innocent, and West was forced to admit he was wrong about Mr. Hamoudi. West was charged with violating several articles of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and luckily for him, his commanders decided not to file for a courts-martial and instead deal with Mr. West, Colonel West at the time, Lieutenant Colonel, via the military's Administrative Article 15 non-judicial punishment. Now, I don't think somebody with that on their service record has the right to pull the patriotism card on Lady Gaga. Certainly, Gaga's mirthful and minor alteration of the words doesn't come close to, quote, defiling the national anthem. You know, Mr. West, why don't you just be honest with us, really? I mean, just be honest with us and admit that you hate gay people and don't want them to have equal rights. That's what this is about. Don't talk about defiling the national anthem. I think people would respect you, at least for your honesty, if you just came out and said what you really think. Alan West, who abused his authority and mistreated an innocent Iraqi detainee, and now tries to throw his cynical brand of patriotism around, is runner-up this week in our Hall of Shame for infamous nonsense. But the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week goes to Wisconsin's Republican Governor Scott Walker. As reported by the Associated Press, Governor Walker quietly signed a contentious Republican bill Friday that would require women seeking abortions to undergo an ultrasound and ban doctors who lack admitting privileges at nearby hospitals from performing the procedures. So under the new Wisconsin law, any woman seeking an abortion would have to get an ultrasound. At least it's not a transvaginal ultrasound, we have to say that. But it is a procedure that is not really required for the medical treatment that the woman wants. The technician during this ultrasound would have to point out the fetus's visible organs and external features in order to even perform the procedure. Abortion providers would have to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles. Planned Parenthood and the American Civil Liberties Union allege that the admitting privileges portion will force a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in Appleton to close, as well as the Affiliated Medical Services abortion clinic in Milwaukee to close. The physicians in both clinics lack local admitting privileges and don't have time to secure any before the law takes effect. Hospitals, the AP article goes on to say, often grant privileges only to physicians who guarantee a minimum number of annual referrals, a requirement that abortion providers can't hope to meet because abortion problems that require hospitalization are rare. Ironic that Republicans, who are always trying to claim that abortion is an unsafe procedure, are using the fact that it is a safe procedure to try to restrict abortion. So Walker's law forces women to get a medical procedure they don't need and will reduce women's options for getting the treatment they want by creating obstacles for doctors who are willing to perform that procedure. The Republican war on women continues, and this week the front goes right through the Wisconsin governor's mansion. Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin and a misogynistic union buster, wins the award for worst and most shameful nonsense of the week. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you for listening. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio this Sunday, July 14th, and Monday, July 15th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time on KCAA Radio, 1050 a.m. in Inland Empire, California. Be sure to follow me and the show on Twitter at Stephen Laser, on Facebook at Making Sense with Steve Laser, and on my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. Until next time, have a great rest of your day and a great week.